Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, brought to you by a Patreon, for whom we'll be doing an exclusive live chat right after this very podcast has finished playing live on YouTube. And this week's topic is going to be, do you live in the happiest place in the world? Well, Martin, do you?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I'm a full-on patriot. So I live in the best country in the world. No, I don't. I don't live in the happiest place in the world. I won't spoil what the happiest place in the world is.
No, not yet.
But I don't think we live in a bad place in the world, but not quite the happiest.
I would say...
Although I am happy in general.
So, I would say that this week has been pretty miserable, though, for many reasons. You know, terrible things going on in the world, but also it's been bloody boiling this week.
Yes, Alex, it has.
Sweating one out right now, mate.
we get about a few days in the British summer, and it's this week, apparently.
it's because it's muggy as shit, man. It's like, it's 9:25 here in the UK, and it's just sweaty and sticky and horrible.
To let you all know, all of you listening to us, all of you watching us on YouTube, the sacrifice we're going to. We've had to close all our windows, close all our doors, even draw the curtains to keep the sound, you know, decent enough for you to hear us, what we're saying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just very hot right now. Mm. But before we get onto our major topic about whether or not we live in the happiest place on earth, we'll be talking about the weird news that we've discovered this week, as well as things that we've learned this week. And we'll probably be addressing some of our favourite comments from you guys, our listeners and viewers, maybe from the past week or maybe from a while ago. I don't know what Alex and Martin have been up to. Shall we get started with things you've learned this week?
Yeah. On the theme of happiness, this is kind of a positive, upbeat news story, I guess. Well, it kind of depends if you're a glass half full or glass half empty kind of person.
We'll start positive and then it'll just descend into depravity as the show goes on.
So what I learned this week is that the amount of nuclear weapons in the world today is actually far fewer than it was in the 1980s. The amount of I don't know why, but I assumed that nuclear weapons were just constantly, they were just building more. But the number of nuclear weapons in the world is down from 70,000 in 1986 to around 14,000 today. So glass half full, you know, the number has decreased drastically. Glass half empty, it's still enough to destroy the world.
Probably many times over.
Many times, yeah.
As in that's what they've done. They've realised once you get past about 7 each, then the world's gone. So no need for any more.
Yeah.
But apparently the US, the UK and Russia have all been reducing their stockpiles, but China, bloody China, and Pakistan, India and North Korea, all the countries that we were talking about last week, actually, are believed to be producing more, which...
Yeah.
Actually, now that I think about it, I want to retract that this was a positive story.
Everything with you is two sides today, Alex, isn't it? First it's the weather and the summer thing, and now it's World War III and nuclear bombs being reduced.
Yeah, I don't know, Robin. I'm in a mixed emotions place.
I mean, but in terms of the outright numbers, those countries don't have as many as the US and Russia and probably the UK, right?
Yeah.
They're much fewer anyway. So although they're increasing their numbers, in a weird way... although no one should have nuclear weapons, according to my opinion, they're fairly justified in what they're doing, right?
I mean,
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's not it's not really who are we to say that they can't have them if we have them, you know? But also, it's just not good, is it? It's not good.
It's one of those great paradoxes, isn't it? In an ideal world, kind of simultaneously, everybody has nuclear weapons and nobody does.
Yeah, that mutually assured destruction, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mad.
Well, kind of keeping with the Cold War theme, actually, the thing I learned this week is from something that happened in 1961. After Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev, met with JFK for the very first time in June 1961, there was a bit of a frosty conference. They didn't get along very well. But afterwards, Nikita Khrushchev sent a special gift to JFK's daughter, Caroline, which was a puppy with a Russian passport.
Oh,
it's very nice. Yeah.
That's cute.
And and the puppy's name was Pushinka, which means fluffy. And it was one of the litter, if that's the right word, from one of the space dogs in the Russian space program.
Really?
One of the dogs that went into space, yeah.
Ah. It was a
celebrity
on purpose. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if it was simultaneously a kind of like, here's a puppy, and by the way, we're in space.
Yeah, this puppy's dad's in space, and this dog is definitely spying on you.
Well, actually, the Secret Service did thoroughly comb through its fur to make sure it had no spying devices implanted in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of sensible, but also so paranoid at the same time. So, yeah, what did you learn this week, Martin?
Well, this week I learned a little bit about Chernobyl.
Wow.
You know that, of course, the disaster happened in 1986.
What happened?
Yes, yeah, it happened. Nuclear reaction. Nuclear plant overheated, caused horrendous destruction around the area. 350,000 people were evacuated from the surrounding area following the explosion as well. But what this did mean is that there was a vacuum where there was basically no one living there and nothing really going on. But over the years since then, animals and wildlife has begun to flourish in the area in this exclusion zone. So you've got plenty of animals. There's lots of like deer and wild dogs and loads of animals that have actually come back to the area since and have made it their home. Like there's like a thriving population of eagles there, and they're living there pretty happily. I mean, there's definitely a debate over whether a lot of these animals will have long-lasting health issues because of eating radiation or whatever. So we'll see in future generations to come whether it becomes an actual issue. But in terms of population numbers of some of these species, they're actually thriving pretty well in an area that, for humans, has been uninhabitable for so long. So.
Really interesting.
Again, quite a positive thing. It's not,
It's good that there can be like a something good to come out of such a horrific incident.
Yeah, I mean, we'll probably find in a few years' time that all these dogs are like, and animals are all deformed horrendously, and it'll be really, really sad and upsetting. But for now,
they
the
have
news
been
seems to be good.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
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 So I guess it's. You can look at it as well as like the whole like in the absence of humanity, nature thrives. You know, that's the general lesson to be learned.
Which isn't as positive a message.
There's a weird unintended theme to all our things we learned this week, isn't there? Kind of the Cold War connection and the whole trying to put a positive spin on a bad situation.
Trying and kind of failing.
Yeah, I think there is definitely a theme, isn't there? Here's
question
the good,
is,
here's the bad.
Will that theme continue into our weird news? I'm not sure it will.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure. So did you see this news story this week? Apparently, according to an aviation minister in Pakistan, more than 30% of civilian pilots in Pakistan have fake licenses. To fly.
What?
They're not qualified to fly. How mad is that?
That's worrying.
Yeah.
That's incredibly worrying.
262 pilots in the country did not take the exam themselves and paid someone else to sit on their behalf. And they don't have any flying experience.
What?
So this is 262 out of 860 active pilots serving in domestic airlines in the country.
Okay, so...
So this isn't like military pilots or anything. This is domestic airline pilots. So this is Pakistan International Airlines, and then a number of other foreign carriers, apparently, which is mad. And it kind of makes you worry, like in this instance, that, you know, Pakistan is the focus. Well, I wonder if this is happening in other countries. And also, how easy is it to fly a plane if someone with no experience can actually fly a plane? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's all those buttons and console controls.
It's
flight simulators nowadays, man.
Yeah.
Flight simulator on the PC. I mean, that's all you need, really. Up in the air.
That was a good game.
But to be honest, like, does Pakistan have a higher than average level of crashes? I mean, it must do, surely. I mean, at least small aircraft accidents must be pretty high in the country.
Yeah.
Well,
you'd expect, wouldn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this was like an investigation that they had into a crash that occurred on May 22nd. A plane crash in the southern city of Karachi that killed 97 people.
Okay.
And these basically, they announced this on Wednesday that over a third of pilots didn't actually take the test.
That's a scandal, isn't it? It is.
It is a massive scandal. It's Pakistan International Airlines.
They've got two problems, right? Because they've got the pilots who are paying someone else to... The ones with the fake licenses. And then there's the ones who are the qualified pilots who are doing the tests for them. And then presumably the people who are doing the tests... Surely they'd recognise when the same pilot turns up, you know, for his fifth test with a different name. And you're like, have we met before? And he's like, got his Groucho Marx moustache and spectacles on. He's like, no, we haven't met before.
Yeah.
But also, like, who announced this as well? Who was it? The aviation minister?
Yeah, the aviation minister.
Like, surely this comes down on his head. Like, their vetting process is not good enough.
No.
Ghulam Sawar Khan is his name.
I know no one resigns for anything these days, but surely if you're allowing 30% of pilots to take to the skies without a license, the buck stops with you there, surely, if you're the aviation minister.
Well, I mean, you would think that. I mean, I guess, what do you do in that instance, though? Like, he's found a mistake, and he's announced it and is trying to correct it. Like, you can't fix something if you don't understand, if there's no problem initially. Do you know what I mean?
You've got to acknowledge the problem.
And if everyone who uncovered a mistake resigned, then no one would announce the mistakes.
I understand that, but you'd expect him to be kicked out the door, and then the next person who comes in says, there have been these errors, hence this person's had to resign, and now we're going to fix them.
Yeah. I guess, I don't know, like, if this was a cover-up by the airlines themselves, or...
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, I don't know how... I can imagine this, like, not necessarily him knowing about it, and then he investigated it, found out. It sounds like he might have done everything right or within his power, but yeah. I mean, someone should definitely be held accountable, for sure. Apparently...
The economic problem, though. I guess now's the right time, isn't it? Now they've got this international pause on flying, or at least a reduction in flying. Now is the time to say, yeah, we can afford to fire 40% of our pilots.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no one's in that immediate... You'd hope that no one's in that immediate danger from an unqualified pilot. So you're saying it's domestic, so that includes, like, as you said, then the national airlines.
The national airlines.
Proper chartered flights.
Yeah, and they specifically mentioned this one airline, Pakistan International Airlines, but they say other foreign carriers are likely to have the same. And they didn't mention whether the pilots involved in this crash had fake licenses, but they said that in the report, they said the pilots in the flight were discussing the coronavirus and they weren't focused. And apparently they ignored warnings from air traffic controllers before the plane went down. So,
That's really sad.
Really sad.
And avoidable.
So they tried to land without lowering the landing gear. So, I mean, it sounds like they didn't have a license.
But let's hope they managed to fix the system.
Yeah, definitely.
Because that is really quite worrying. Should I go next?
Yeah, go ahead. Is it more cheerful than that one? Or is it...
Not really. I guess it's kind of funny. But, I mean, with all that's going on in the world, and especially with COVID-19 and everyone not being out on the streets, a town or a city in Thailand has had an issue with monkeys. So the Lopburi province has 2,000 monkeys living in it. And usually when the city is full of tourists and full of people around on the streets, these monkeys are able to scavenge for food, and they get fed by people on the streets, and lots of steal food from the local markets or whatever. But of course, with no one really taking to the streets and everyone staying at home, the monkeys have got a little bit out of control and have been fighting each other and causing an absolute chaos on the streets. So they've been fighting each other, have become super aggressive, and have been fighting humans who have been like those who have been able to be out so they can get food. So it is kind of sad because they're obviously scrapping to survive.
Yeah.
So the local authorities have actually set up cages to lure these monkeys into with fruit, and have then been sterilizing them so that they can't repopulate, so it doesn't get too much out of control.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's got to be carefully done, right? Because don't you threaten wiping out the entire population if you catch and sterilize them all?
Well, yeah, they've got to be careful. I mean, they've taken 300 into forced sterilization. They've lured 300 in. And
the leader is called Leonidas. Is this madness? This Sparta.
I like it. Your reference. Yeah. But so far, it seems to be doing the trick. I mean, we'll know in the future whether this remains a problem. I mean, I imagine that when the lockdown lifts in Thailand, the situation might be slightly different, and actually, a lot of these monkeys will get back to eating the tourists' food again. But yeah, it's crazy that they've had to go to this extreme measure to stop these monkeys attacking each other and attacking people on the streets of this province.
It's interesting because it's kind of like, I, as a fan of the franchise, I sometimes wonder, like, what would happen if Planet of the Apes does start to happen? Like, do we have to kill all the monkeys? Apparently, no, we don't. We can just kind of humanely capture them and sterilize them.
Is that on the 2020 bingo card?
Planet of the Apes probably is. It's probably one of them. But wasn't there an escape a few weeks ago of like a monkey in a laboratory?
Oh, with the COVID thing, yeah.
With the
positive COVID blood, where was that again?
I mean,
that
that's gone quiet.
Thailand? Yeah.
That was literally like, okay, we're living in a simulation now for sure. There's no way that this year wasn't designed by someone playing SimCity. You know when, did you ever play SimCity when you build up a big city and then you wreak havoc on it with loads of natural disasters and horrible plagues and stuff? I feel like that's 2020 right now.
I mean, Alex, I've got to admit, I've actually never played a SimCity game.
Oh.
Yeah,
I've played The Sims. I've never played SimCity. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like The Sims. It's essentially, you know, putting four walls around a sim and just watching them starve to death.
Yeah. But as a year, the ladder from the pool. You know,
exactly. Insight into Alex is very dark and disturbed.
Everyone's done that. Everyone's done that.
Did you also stamp on ants as a kid?
No.
You totally did. You did. You got the magnifying glass out, didn't you? Burnt their wings off.
Sid. Yeah, Toy Story.
No, I wasn't like that.
Well, my news, I'm afraid, is not great news, but it's in Cambodia, an elderly man was admitted to hospital with severe abdominal pains, incredible pains. He was doubled over, couldn't move, and doctors found after doing tests and scanning him that his health problems stemmed from a leech that had swum up inside his penis.
No.
And drank a pint of his blood from inside his bladder.
Oh my god.
No. Oh,
he dear. Had gone. It was a hot day and he'd gone skinny dipping in some water and the leech had gone straight up there. But the problem was extracting it was difficult because after drinking a pint of his blood, the leech had kind of quadrupled in size.
Oh my goodness, no. That's bad.
So that's where the pain came from.
Yep. Yes. I would do it.
They got out.
Did they have to do surgery? Did they have to?
I think they did. Yeah.
I don't want to be like rude or anything, but how how do you not notice a leech going up.
Yeah, I mean, leeches, how big is a leech?
They're not
that big, yeah. They're pretty small, yeah.
Yeah, but they're big enough to notice, surely.
I mean, I can't remember if you guys, I don't know if you guys remember, but a little while ago I had to have a cystoscopy. Do you remember that? It's where they put a camera to look inside your bladder, and there's only one way up there.
Yeah.
And it's not an insignificant size camera that they put there. And you're not under any, you have like an anesthetic gel, but you're not under any kind of local or anything.
Yeah.
Or general, certainly not general. And you feel it quite significantly. So I was thinking, okay, how does a leech compare in size? But leeches are quite small, aren't they? You think you'd feel something, though. A bit of a tingle, at the very least.
Somehow, Robin, that was the most optimistic story we've discussed this week.
Yes, you can survive a leech swimming up your penis and into your bladder. Yeah. That is the lesson. Before we get into the topic of today's episode, after that we get into our quiz, shall we discuss some of the comments from the last week?
Yes.
So I've got a comment from last week's podcast, which was about, is World War III starting in Asia? Pretty tense times over there. And it's from Taki Yasir. Although I think Satana Malfoy said something similar, which is, we forgot to mention that the entire NATO alliance would also be dragged into a war in Asia if the UK and the US were dragged into it, which we postulated they might be because of South Korea going to war with North Korea. Yeah. So that was a really great point, and thanks for reminding us.
Yeah, we totally kind of overlooked NATO.
NATO,
in our discussion on potential World War III outbreaks.
It's true. It's true. It's a good point.
I've got a comment from David Guevara. It's a bit of a pat ourselves on the back kind of comment, but I just thought it was really nice. He says, this was hands down my favorite episode ever. I've watched you since you started All Time Conspiracies. And seriously, guys, this was awesome. So funny. Great news. Just awesome. Lol.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
That was so
nice.
That's impressive.
Usually it's the other way around. Episode 19. What are you doing?
I just thought that was lovely. So thanks, David. Cheers.
That's a mind-blowingly kind comment. Thank you, David. Yeah. Hope you enjoy this one.
Well, I've got a comment from Old Greg's Creamy Baileys, which is quite possibly
that sounds tasty.
One of my favourite usernames. Although the words Old Greg's and Creamy have a capital letters, and Baileys is a lowercase, which is slightly disconcerting. But anyway, Old Greg says, funny you mentioned aliens for July, as there is loads of UFO videos coming out of Miami today on Twitter. This was 2 days ago. I missed these.
Missed that. Yeah.
20, and then he goes on to say, 2020, man. What's next? Bigfoot? Zombies? And then an asteroid to finish up on New Year's?
Yeah, it might
maybe.
Happen.
Might maybe.
Happen. I was thinking, actually, as you mentioned, the monkey thing and the outbreak with the COVID-19 in wherever it was. That's like 28 days later, where the monkey escapes and infects people, then the zombie apocalypse happens. So that might also be on the cards. Now the monkeys are broken
maybe
out. It's going to be zombies.
Maybe. Anything's possible in this year. Anything is possible.
I'm hoping for aliens, though, because even if they destroy us, at least
we'll know.
We'll know that there's life out there that can carry on, even if humanity can't.
So, thank you for all of those great comments, which brings us nicely onto our question of the week. And that question is, do you live in the happiest place in the world? And this isn't plucked completely out of nowhere, because as most of you will probably know, there is an annual World Happiness Report, which I think is funded by the UN, but definitely Gallup, the international polling organization, is involved. And this year's World Happiness Survey is interesting because it's the first time that they have included subjective measures of happiness. So basically they've gone and asked people, how happy do you feel? Whereas normally there's some kind of supposedly objective list of categories and factors that people, that countries and towns and cities must meet in order to score highly on the happiness scale. But of course, happiness is such a kind of abstract concept. I thought it was worth talking about, firstly, are you guys happy? And secondly, what do you think makes places the happiest in the world?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just stepping back slightly, I think in terms of the fact that they're including this subjective category, right, as of how happy do you feel, if someone said what define if someone said oh how happy how can you tell that someone's happy, the first thing you'd say is, well, do you feel happy, right? That'd be surely that'd be the first defining yeah. thing that you'd ask someone if you were to try and find out if they were happy. So I mean, it seems crazy to not have that included in this index, but at the same time they want it to be scientific and they want objective truth, right? And so that's why they have these categories where they can rank. But I mean, I'm sure you'll provide a little bit more information, Robin, but I imagine that not all these categories were weighted equally before. Like, if a category is how is the healthcare or the provisions in your area, that would be weighted very differently to, I don't know, how much do you trust your local government? And like, they have different weightings on how happy they make people feel, surely.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to your question. In general, I do feel happy. Do I feel like I'm living in one of the happiest places in the world or even in the UK? It's tough to say. Probably not. Seems like most people are miserable in the world today, especially with all that's going on, and justifiably so in a lot of cases.
Yeah, it's a difficult time to be talking about this, because it's difficult to judge, I don't know, countries like for their normal range of happiness, I guess, during this time. But yeah, for all that we like to complain, and we have been complaining this podcast, I do feel on the whole happy. There's a lot to, you know, for saying, like, like trust in the government and that kind of thing can make people unhappy, and I totally agree with that. And also, like, how affluent the country is and the social safety nets that are put in place, I guess, would make you feel happy. Like, I can't imagine living in countries that don't have good healthcare at the moment. You'd feel so scared, especially with everything going on.
Yeah, that's true. Countries in Africa, which are still developing comprehensive healthcare systems. Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess even in like the US, where a lot of people's healthcare is tied to their employment, like, what's the latest employment figures? Massive unemployment as a result of businesses shutting down. So not only have you lost your job, but you've lost your access to cover for healthcare as well. And it's just that double whammy at the moment where everything's kind of piling on top of one another, that chain reaction. So yeah, that must be really affecting an index like this, for sure, even in some of the wealthiest countries in the world, or wealthy according to GDP, which of course is debatable as well.
Yeah. Well, I think that now you mentioned GDP, I think that's the important thing to just bring up as we discuss how the happiness index works, is that it does traditionally look, it focuses on factors like economic growth, GDP in particular, and I think levels of democracy as well. Although I'm sure there's some debate to be had about how you define levels of democracy, but of course, as we know in our societies, anyone listening to this, whatever country you're in, you know that GDP, economic growth, isn't equally spread. So it's good that this time in 2020 they've decided to introduce some new factors to the survey. So instead of just looking at whether a country as a nation is economically doing well, because as we know the richest get richer and oftentimes the poorest get poorer, instead they're focusing on environmental factors. And it seems very obvious to say, but they're focusing on social, urban and the natural environment. So when they say social, they're talking about not just the society as a whole, but your kind of your friendship groups, your sense of loneliness. And this is possibly getting in too much into the minutiae, but there's kind of interesting differences between nations about family and how that affects your happiness. And the reason that they introduced this fact, the example they cited in the Gallup survey, was that a typical contrast between whether someone is happy or not is between a parent and a non-parent. And Martin, you have your own views. I'd like to hear what you say about this. Because they say, typically, you ask the parent of a child if they're happy, and they say yes. And typically, they will rate their own level of happiness higher than a person who doesn't have children. But objectively, you can simultaneously measure that parents are under so much more objective stress than people without children. So as a parent, Martin, if you don't mind me asking, how do you feel about that? Do you agree with that? Does that make sense to you?
To an extent, because, I mean, the fact is, everyone's own individual situation is so varied. There are a million and one different contributing factors to whether someone's happy. And even defining what happiness is kind of a redundant thing anyway, right? What does the word happy mean? But anyway, yes, sometimes it might be more stressful, but then there are other things that are more rewarding that you couldn't objectively say exist. For example, you could say that you have a content family life, but for everyone, that what that actually consists of is so different. I don't know. I don't know. It's tough. It's tough because if you have children, there are certain stresses, but there's also so much amazing things that are going on in your life as well. So,
Do you think?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, and then it's whether it's causation or correlation. Like, some people would only want to have children when they're in a financial position to have children, so maybe they'd be more content because they maybe have in a better financial position to have children in the first place. So that's another reason why they're happy. So it might not be that they're because they're a parent they're happy, but because they're financially or emotionally in a position where they're stable, then they feel like they can have children. So then they're more likely to be happy, you know?
Yeah.
Causation versus correlation thing is always going to be an issue when it comes to measuring something so subjective.
Do you think there's also something in how they gather this data? Because I mean, they're surveying people, right? And asking them.
Yeah.
So are people going to, you know, even try and convince themselves that they're happy and be like, yeah, I'm great. Yeah.
it's a good question. Yeah.
When actually they're, you know, deeply miserable.
Yeah.
It could be cultural as well, right? Like in some societies, it seems much more common to say that you're happy or feel like you have to say you're happy, whereas in others the kind of the status quo would be, well, things could be better, I could, you know, just the way that societies function means that people will react to that those same questions in very different ways based on societal norms.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I mean, an interesting thing related to what you just said, Alex, which is about how are they conducting these surveys, is that on the second of those factors that they explored, which is urban environment, the 2020 World Happiness Survey found a direct and almost exact correlation between high-scoring cities and high-scoring countries. One of the interesting findings of the 2020 survey is that by asking these new questions, they found that, perhaps unsurprisingly, well-being inequality was more of a factor than income inequality in overall happiness across countries. So basically,
well-being was more than
so
it's going on the whole thing that money doesn't necessarily make you happy.
Exactly. Yeah. Money doesn't buy happiness. Sense. But perhaps importantly, lack of money doesn't create unhappiness. I'm sure it does for most people. It seems like a very careless thing to say, but
I think it comes down to like other factors. Surely it comes down to other factors. Like if you don't have, you know, a huge income, but where you're living, the rent isn't unaffordable, and you know, you've got great social programs, you've got great healthcare that's free, you've got lots of societal safety nets in place, then you don't need to have as good a salary, and there's not that demand for chasing the career ladder. I guess you can focus more on what makes you happy, doing something that makes you happier.
It's true, but at the same time, if you look at the list from this year's happiness survey, you especially look at the least happy countries and cities, a lot of them are some of the most impoverished in the world, right? They're not wealthy cities compared to the top 10.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great moment. Shall we reveal the top 10 happiest countries? Yeah,
and then least happy.
And the least happy. For the third year in a row, Finland is the happiest country in the world.
Third year in a row, wow. Yeah,
followed by Denmark, which was the former champion for a few years, followed by Switzerland, followed by Iceland, which that's kind of cool. Followed by Norway, followed by the Netherlands. followed by Sweden. So Sweden is the seventh happiest place in the world. Only seventh, yeah. But then we finally get outside that group and we're into New Zealand in eighth place.
Not surprising.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, and then we're back to Europe with Austria and Luxembourg in ninth and tenth place.
I mean, that's if you ask me to name the top ten, I think I'd probably get about six of them without making a mistake before getting one wrong. You know,
yeah,
it's what you'd expect.
Pretty much.
But why is that the case? Why has Finland in particular been so successful over the last few years? 3 years in a row is quite impressive.
Yeah.
So I've just taken a look at the report and they've given several reasons as to why these countries tend to do really well on the happiness scale. So the first one, as we mentioned, was welfare state generosity. So the Nordic countries are renowned for their welfare state model with extensive social benefits. It's those social safety nets. It's just like a stress off their minds, I imagine. Like with the US and, you know, we're over here with like people struggling to make rent and that kind of thing. I guess it's just the social benefits that they have that you don't need to worry about.
Do any of those countries, I was going to say, do any of those countries have like a basic income?
They were trialing it, weren't they?
Yeah, I think it was in Finland.
Finland? Yeah, yeah, they were.
I mean, I mean, a lot of people would, especially maybe in the US, would go communism, wouldn't they?
Yeah,
it's cry communism. Yeah. But it seems like it's making people happy to have that security.
Yeah.
To know that no matter what, they can at least survive, right?
Mm.
Yeah. Second on the list is institutional quality. So quality of government is another key explanation provided for high satisfaction ratings.
It's kind of sad, isn't it?
Well, I mean, you know, if you have faith in the people in charge, you know, you feel a bit more secure and that would make you feel more happy. It kind of makes sense.
No, it's good. It's just kind of sad that they're able to point that out and say, good government equals good country. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And then...
And it sounds very definitive as well. It's like, it sounds like, To me, would I think that having trust in institutional government would make me feel happier? I mean, maybe over the long term, like... Feeling like your democratic voice actually makes a difference and people respond to the public. There's not a sense of disillusionment, which is, I guess, is what a lot of these happiness indicators are about, right?
Yeah.
You feel optimistic.
And so this is kind of government quality is judged by people's ability to participate in choosing the government, freedom of expression, freedom of association, and political stability. Kind of... is how they define, you know, what is a quality government. And then next on the list, rather predictably, is income inequality. So the Nordic countries are famous for low levels of income inequality. It goes back to what you were saying about wellness being more important than income inequality.
Because to different people, of course, this will affect people's happiness in different ways, right? Like for some people, if you're incredibly active in politics, knowing that your voice matters would maybe be more important than your income, whereas for other people, income would be paramount to the happiness.
Yeah, that's true.
For different people, it's different, isn't it?
Well, the last two things that they note is the freedom to make life choices and trust in other people and social cohesion. So this makes sense, right?
And presumably those things are really interlinked. So, you know, cohesion presumably comes from having trust in your government and being generally happy with your life, right?
Exactly.
People don't go at each other's throats, and therefore that reinforces the sense of happiness and stability.
And these people have the freedom to make life choices because of the social safety nets that have been put in place and the relatively low income inequality. They can choose to take, you know, a worse job that they might prefer over just taking anything that is going to pay the bills.
And also they have great provisions for maternity and paternity leave and stuff like that. So I can't remember which country it was, but there's one or maybe more of the Scandinavian countries provide like a provisions box, don't they, after had a child. I think it has everything you need for like the first few months, including like a cot. And...
Yeah, well, that was Denmark, wasn't it? I think.
It's Denmark.
I think Scotland does it as well.
Do they really?
Good old Scotland, if that's true. Yeah.
I mean, it might not be true. I thought it was, but...
Well, I plan to move there anyway, so you know, that's just another reason.
Shall we all move to Scotland? Let's do it.
Let's just go. Yeah, let's go.
It's before they become independent.
Shall we just discuss briefly the least happy countries in the world?
Yes.
We probably should, yeah.
I think we should, yeah. So counting down, so from the 10th least happy to the least happy,
I imagine in this list it doesn't make too much difference.
Probably not a huge difference between a lot of them. India, surprisingly, actually. Thought India might be slightly higher but in the happiness rankings. But no, India is the 10th least happy country in the world, followed by Malawi, Yemen, Botswana, yeah. Tanzania, never quite sure how you're supposed to say that, Central African Republic, Rwanda, Zimbabwe, South Sudan, and then Afghanistan.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of political turmoil in a lot of these countries, isn't there?
I mean,
and high levels of poverty as well.
Yeah, and I think Martin made this point before we started recording, which is all you have to do is look at a list of current wars being fought, particularly civil wars, and you've got that list. Which is pretty tragic.
Surprises.
Yeah.
No surprises, apart from the fact that maybe some other countries like Syria or didn't make it or, you know.
But of course, North Korea. What's worth pointing out is that these civil wars and these internal strife comes from, in large part, to the fact that the country is not a happy country in the first place, right?
Yeah, no, good point.
You know, you've got these huge divisions and terrible inequality. And more to the point, as Alex and Martin, you've both said, it's not just that the income inequality is so extreme, it's that the people at the bottom have nothing. And there's nothing to look after them. And so they, you know, unhappiness is rife and tensions are rife, and you've got all these other divisions become more pronounced as people are more unhappy, I suppose. And people look for any excuse to identify themselves as separate from others, you know, whether it's religion or politics or anything, really.
I mean, there is that phrase that the money doesn't buy you happiness, or certainly doesn't always buy you happiness. But there's definitely an argument to be made that you do need at least a basic level of income to avoid being completely unhappy and miserable.
A universal truth must be that poverty is misery, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. 100%. Yeah.
You can be a poor person relative to the rest of your society, but to be in poverty, especially as it's defined globally, it's not a good thing.
The understatement of the year, it is not a good thing to
be in poverty. It's not a good thing. Since we all live in the UK, do you want to know what the happiest places in the UK are?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Oh, will my town be featured? Probably not.
Well, I don't think this is actually to do with the World Happiness Survey, sadly. But this is to do with another set of surveys. But Hexham, apparently, in the northeast of England, is the happiest place. Not heard of it. Oh. I've heard of it.
Hexham. Nice. I haven't heard of Hexham. Sorry for all of our listeners from Hexham.
That's all right.
Why are they the happiest, Robert?
Alex, I didn't read that. Can't put me on the spot like that.
They just love Hexham. It's a great place to live. I'll have to visit it one day.
Harrogate, after that. I mean, they do excellent tea.
It's posh, isn't it?
Yeah.
I went there for a wedding last year.
Is it nice?
Yeah, very nice, yeah.
Did it make you feel happier being there?
I was only there for one day, so I don't, I'm not sure about happier, but it was very nice.
Were you sad leaving it, saying goodbye? Did you give that a little?
I wouldn't mind going back at some point. It was nice.
Richmond upon Thames is the third happiest. I mean, there seems to be a pattern of wealth here, doesn't there?
Yeah.
And then Sevenoaks, actually, Martin. That's not far from where you grew up, is it?
That's where I am right now. That's where I live.
Well, there you go.
There you go, Martin. You're in one of the happiest places in the UK.
Everyone's miserable on the trains, though, commuting to work.
So. Yeah, that's why it's so happy. They do the survey when everyone's gone to work. So
they just literally do it just with people just hanging around the town. Yeah, that could be right. That sounds about right. But what do you say, fourth?
No, in the top 10. It's like top 10. Ninth, I think. Ninth, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll take it.
Fair enough. London is the happiest city in the UK, which isn't a huge surprise. Yeah, I mean,
compared to other cities, I guess. But,
yeah, because every other city in the UK is constantly banging on about how better off London is. So, you know, there's always that basic degree of unhappiness.
Yeah.
I, in a way, I'm kind of surprised, though, because there's massive wealth inequality in London.
Yeah.
And and a lot of people complain about London being not a friendly city to be in.
It isn't,
like people don't say hi to you. And, people bump into you on the streets, and it's really busy and polluted. And there's also big issues with knife crime.
Yeah.
But also, like the major cities, and like London included, are seen as, or are, you know, more left wing, I guess, generally on the whole.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not being represented like politically in the country, in government, or haven't been for ages. So that is interesting, given that that was such a key component of happiness.
Good government,
it's true.
London also has its fairly independent mayor, so maybe.
It's true.
That has something to do with it.
Yeah.
And also, if you look at provisions, it's like it's packed full of stuff to do and good schools as well. On the whole, I mean, there are rough schools everywhere. So not every school is going to be good, but there are lots of the top schools in the country are based in London.
That's true.
Although, in terms of provisions and education, it's probably pretty good.
Worth remembering, though, it's the happiest city in the country. It wasn't in the list of happiest places in the country. So, that's worth remembering. Yeah.
I can think of a few that I'd imagine would be technically happier, but
interesting. I'd have expected a couple, maybe Bristol or Edinburgh, to be above that, but apparently not. But shall we do a quiz?
Yes, let's.
Yeah. So, welcome to the quiz, the grand finale of this season of the Just Interesting podcast, episode 20, and the leaderboard. I'm shame to say.
It's a close one. It's a nail biter. Who's going
to
win?
This is the right one to end on, though, because the competition really is between you two to see who can come out on top.
In second place.
Join second place, possibly. Martin's currently beating me by one, I think. I think he's on five and I'm on four.
So close.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, stakes are high.
Okay. Well, as always, 10 questions with a bonus question to break any ties. But gentlemen, first, play me your buzzers. Martin?
I've gone with something old school, although it has been used in subsequent games within this franchise. But this is the N64 version.
Falcon Punch!
Captain Falcon.
Falcon Punch!
Falcon Punch, yeah.
It's a bit aggressive, Martin.
Thank you, I made it myself.
Fair. Well, I've gone for a classic that served me well this past, since the founding of this
season,
podcast, since the start of season one.
Mm-hmm.
Inspired by that same French excellence, it's
Drunk Orson Welles will see me through.
Fermented in the bottle.
Nice.
It's fermented in the bottle.
One day I'll do a quiz where every question is just recite the next word.
That'll be an incredibly niche quiz.
It would be. I'm not sure that many people would want to play along, but hey.
Well, we'd see the audience retention plummet from that moment. But anyway, on with the real quiz. Today's finale, and because the weather's so hot, I hope these questions are doable. I wasn't exactly in the right frame of mind when I wrote this, so we'll find out.
Okay. I'm intrigued and worried at the same time.
Yeah.
That's the way I want you to feel. So, fingers on buzzers. Question number one. True or false?
Oh, okay.
Neil Armstrong was the first American to travel into outer space.
Inspired by that same French excellence.
French excellence. That was Alex.
False.
Correct. It is false.
My God. I didn't know if it was a trick one.
It was actually Alan Shepard in 1961.
There we go.
So, 1-0 to Alex. Into question two. What is the second most widely spoken language in the world?
Falcon Punch!
Martin.
I am going to go for Spanish.
Yeah.
Oh, damn it. I was going to say Spanish.
One all. So 460 million people speak Spanish worldwide. Do you know what the most popular language is?
English.
No.
That's number three.
Mandarin.
Is it Mandarin?
Mandarin. 918 million people speak Mandarin, which is nearly double Spanish.
Wow. I guess, yeah. China's a big place.
Yeah. Okay, question number three, and it's one all. Oh, it's a good start. I should say, this is 3 points, by the way.
What? Oof.
Potentially 3 points.
Threw that on us.
You can work together, so it's not like... Well, it'll make more sense, but...
Okay.
What are the three most popular websites in the USA?
Okay.
By that same French excellence.
Oh, man. Oh.
I think Alex got... I think you got there first, Alex.
Okay.
Thank you, Martin.
I think it was Alex, so too.
How humble of you.
I'm going to go for Facebook, YouTube, and Google. Is that... Does that count?
You are correct.
Am I?
Yeah.
So 3 points.
Well, maybe I'll just give him 1 point.
No.
I mean, it's impressive to get them all in the right order.
No, you said.
I did say 3 points. I mean, I thought that would be harder.
That's blowing me out of water.
Well, that might be a problem.
it was what was agreed beforehand. That's fine.
Yeah, shouldn't have said that. But it's Google, YouTube, and Facebook, the most popular websites in the USA. Okay, question number four, and it's currently 4-1. Whoops. Who was the fourth Musketeer?
The fourth Musketeer.
The fourth Musketeer, yeah.
Oh, shh.
Inspired by that same French...
No, this is just one of the three, isn't it? D'Artagnan?
That was the fourth Musketeer.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, the main character. The three Musketeers are the other three.
Yeah.
And D'Artagnan becomes the fourth.
Nice.
Fair enough, man. I read the first page of that to Clara a couple of nights ago.
Really?
Then she grabbed the book and threw it on the floor.
Well, that's a big book.
It is, but it was on the shelf, so, you know, just picked it up.
Oh, okay. question number five. Closest wins, this one.
Okay.
How many Five Guys franchise restaurants were once owned by Shaquille O'Neal?
think of a number, any number.
That could literally.
Pretty much, yeah. Think of any number.
Inspired by that same French excellence.
I believe Shaquille O'Neal owned 17 Five Guys franchises. Okay.
Martin, what's your guess?
See, I was wondering what his number was. Like, maybe he had something to do with that. My initial thought was 12. I mean, statistically, I'd probably be better going higher than Alex for the quiz, but I thought 12 originally, so I'm going to go for 12.
That's your final answer?
Yeah, why not?
Alex is closer.
Yeah.
Because he owned 155.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy.
Okay, fair enough, man.
He eventually sold his stake in the company, and he did say that burgers have been good to me.
I bet they have.
Yeah.
Fair enough, big guy.
So, question number six, put on your history hats.
I think I've already lost, haven't I?
I don't know.
What's the score?
I think it's 6-1.
Is it 6-1 or 5-1? 5-1.
This is question six. You can still come back. You can still...
Oh, yeah, technically.
You can still draw.
I think you can. I think you can. Yeah. So, sixth president of the United States was the son of the second president of the United States. What was his name?
Oh, my goodness.
Inspired by that same French excellence.
Yes, Alex.
I don't know his first name. Well, I'm going to get... Is it Quincy Adams?
Quincy.
I need his full name.
I don't know. I don't know his first name. What's his name?
That was my guess. Was that not his first name, then?
That was not his first name.
Is that a part of his name, then?
That is his surname.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, Martin?
John.
Correct. It's John Quincy Adams.
Quincy actually is part of his name. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not his first name.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why, but Quincy sprang out. Like,
well, you don't expect it to be. It's an unusual name.
To be honest, Alex, I probably would have given you the point for that one. knowing the Quincy
well,
bit.
I'm the quizmaster, and I'm giving Martin the point.
Well, thank you very much. We've still got a chance.
That's fair. That's fair.
All right.
No, I got it wrong.
Question number 7. Although I'm impressed, both of you, you knew that. That's great. That's fantastic. Question number 7. Which famous Western from 1960 is a remake of the 1954 Japanese film Seven Samurai?
Inspired by that same French excellence.
You both got there, but Alex got there first.
It's just a guess. Is it The Wild Bunch?
No.
Is it? Is it The Magnificent Seven?
It is The Magnificent Seven. So much more sense. Which was itself remade in 2016.
It was. So. I went to the cinema and saw that.
Was it good?
I actually quite enjoyed it. I mean, it was a funny, you know, it's fairly slapsticky. Like the original was fairly slapsticky. But yeah, it wasn't too bad. I don't think it got glowing reviews, but I quite enjoyed it.
Oh. Okay, that's good. Impressive for a remake of a remake.
Yeah. So I think they shouldn't have made it, but yeah, it's fine.
The score is now. I'm not confused.
Is it 6-3?
The scores.
How many questions are left? We can work it out.
I think it's 3 left. It's question 8, right? And it's something 6-3.
Yeah. Oh my god, you're gonna bring this back. I know.
Yeah, I need to get 3 right.
Yeah. It's possible.
It's possible. It's not probable.
Okay. Question number 8. The US dollar is based upon the Spanish dollar, which, when it was first minted, was commonly known as what?
Inspired by that same French...
Pesos?
No.
Oh, that's something different, isn't it?
But that is a unit that makes up a dollar.
Oh. Yeah.
So what was the Spanish one known as? That's the question.
Yeah, colloquially, kind of, you know.
What would it be known as? I don't know. When was this? Do you know what kind of time?
So it was first minted in 1497. Oh, wow. But it was in circulation for a long time. Centuries, in fact.
Okay. I'm not sure. Let's have a guess. Let's go for, I don't know, the Spanish pound.
No.
It's not really a clue.
It was a dollar. It was a dollar. I'll give you a clue.
Okay.
It's definitely a phrase you've heard before. Think, and fingers on buzzers here, think pirates.
Inspired by that same French excellence.
French excellence. Yes, Alex.
Doubloon.
No.
Oh, what? No.
Sorry. Do you want another clue?
Go on.
So think pirates, and it's a 3-word phrase.
Oh, I don't know.
I'm thinking of pirate phrases now. And that would be known as the coin, the Olmi Hearty.
No,
I don't know.
No, I feel like my clue has misled you.
3-word phrase. Shiver me timbers.
That's a good one.
How have we not got this?
the audience at home is just like screaming at the screen, I imagine. Shall I tell you?
Nah, go on. Okay. I'm not that fast anyway.
Okay. It is a piece of 8.
Ah, okay. Oh. Old Pirates of the Caribbean kind of.
Yeah,
a piece of 8. Oh, interesting.
Pieces of 8. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Really, they called the Spanish dollar a piece of 8. Cool.
I don't think that was as obvious as, like, I don't know. I was expecting something super like Jolly Rogers.
I realized by leading with the pirates thing, I probably sent you down the wrong path, didn't I?
Pieces of
Spanish doubloons and pieces of 8 are the 2 things that pirates always talk about. Mm. I think anyway. So that was my thinking.
No, nice.
I mean, well done for coming up with all the 3-word pirate phrases there.
I mean, a crossword, we'd have had many a option.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Many a wrong option.
So let's see what the points difference is by continuing on to question 9.
Mm-hmm.
So the 9th month of the Islamic calendar is a period of fasting and prayer called what?
Inspired by that same French excellence.
That was Alex.
Ramadan.
It is Ramadan. Well done.
Thank
7-3?
I think so.
Yeah.
It's those three. It's those 3 points.
It's that quick finger on the buzzer.
Yeah, it would be.
In a Western movie, you'd be straight. You'd be killing everyone. That trigger finger, deadly.
I mean, in fairness, it would be 5-3 right now, even without 3 points.
Shoot first, so. Think later.
Yeah,
I think I just better start buzzing early.
Yeah, that's Alex's secret. He's just quick on the buzzer.
You say it like I've got a secret. Yeah. I was coming third in these up until the finale, where I've just scraped second place. So,
but you
don't look at me year. Like I've got all the answers.
Okay, question number 10.
Okay.
Which psychological test uses a series of 10 ink blots to analyze someone's personality?
Oh, what's it called?
By that same French
excellence. Yes, Alex.
Rorschach test.
It is. Yeah, it's the Rorschach test.
Very good.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, that was a decisive victory. I have
Thank
to
you.
Say.
Yeah, very
Thank
good.
Thank you very much. But well played, Martin.
Very good. GG. Is there a bonus question?
There is a bonus question.
When it takes
happy
all.
To read it to you.
When it takes all.
Yeah,
this is actually
yeah,
the golden
in, right?
question.
All bets are all in. Who all takes first, all? Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah, okay. Bonus question 11.
Because we're joined on total scores, aren't we? So,
no.
Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah.
No. I didn't agree to that. Unless
so you,
I get
you
the
prefer it to be a draw,
right.
or you're on a good run. So,
oh,
I mean, it's up to you.
No, let's make it more interesting. Okay, whoever gets a bonus question gets second place. Shall we say?
I
that?
Mean, the other thing is, Alex, I'm not on form right now. I've lost a fair few in a row, so.
No, I think you've been hustling me, and this is you. You've known this, and you want a
this.
Decisive second place.
Yeah. Here goes. Question 11.
If this is a rugby question, I swear to God,
it's not a rugby question, but it could have been actually. It almost was. So I'm sorry, Martin.
Oh.
But which fast food chain is famous for its secret recipe of 11?
Oh my goodness, my buzzer! Spices. My buzzer's like buffering. Look at my buzzer, it's buffering.
Oh no!
I was straight
Alex,
in there.
Alex buzzed. I'm afraid.
Yeah.
KFC for the win.
It is
ridiculous.
KFC.
This whole season, I've had issues with this. Today's been the first time it hasn't been buffering.
Do you know what, Martin?
And that happens.
Take this as a lesson going into season two.
to not bother with the quiz. Is that the lesson? Actually, if we're doing reforms for season two. My vote is just to not bother.
I mean, congratulations, Alex. Yeah. You have
no. You won the quiz comprehensively anyway. So.
Second place.
Very good. Very good.
Thank you.
Although, actually, wasn't Martin one ahead of you? So now you've got the same.
Well, that's what we originally decided, but then we came to the idea that the bonus question was going to be
because
we were currently drawing.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, it didn't necessarily take into account the provision for
the
faulty buzzer, but yeah, no, fair enough. I push for it. It's
gracious
my fault.
Thing for you to do, Martin. I think that was very, very gracious. But those scores will be on screen right now. We thought about having a prize, but
it never materialised.
No,
never materialised.
No.
I can't give a prize to myself for winning this season, but you know,
well, you can have a round of applause.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Very good.
Thank you. Oh,
a comprehensive victory overall, Robin.
Yeah.
Cheers. And it won't happen next time. Alex is definitely on the way. So it's just
big time.
Maybe.
Please tell us your scores, listening at home or watching us on YouTube in whatever the nearest comment is for you, comment box for you is.
Or,
no cheating, of course.
Or come and tell us what it is right now.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
In the live chat. And we're going to have a live discussion right now on our Discord for our Patreon supporters. Thank you again for listening. And we'll see you over in the chat.
Absolutely.
Bye for
see
now.
See you later.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, guys. Have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.